And well, we've certainly heard a lot from and about Joel Fitzgibbon in the last week. There was a fairly raucous, apparently, caucus meeting of the Labor Party on Monday night down in Canberra. Apparently, there's quite a lot of loud voices, etc. And as a result of that, the following morning, Joel Fitzgibbon gave a press conference outside Parliament House and announced that he'd resigned from the shadow cabinet, was a backbencher, and in a sense he said he was going to go back and try and reconnect with his electorate. He made a lot of comments about wanting to put Labor back into the Labor Party and that he wanted to broaden the appeal. And this is part of what he had to say to us and when he spoke to us on, I think it was Wednesday morning, saying that he wanted to appeal to as many voters as possible.
I'm saying that to win an election, you need to capture all of them and be a voice for all of them and serve all of them. You can't exercise your ambitions for the country from opposition. That's the reality. I'm just looking for balance. I want to broaden our horizon. I want to appeal to more people. I want the Labor Party to be a bit more like it was when I joined it 36 years ago.
Well, somebody who's come out and certainly doesn't agree with Joel as far as energy policy and climate change goes, and that's Member for Shortland, Pat Conroy, who's on the line. Good morning, Pat.
Morning, Richard. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Pat. You believe that Joel's stance on climate change would, in your words, put Labor in, quote, permanent opposition. Why do you think that, Pat?
Well, for a couple of reasons. First, Labor can only govern when we unite our two great bases, which is the working class of Australia and, secondly, university-educated progressive people. We're at our best when we represent both those groups. And by attempting to hug the government on climate change, by effectively doing nothing on climate change, which is what Mr. Fitzgibbon is advocating, he's effectively saying, don't worry about one of our two bases. And the truth is, firstly, that we can have strong climate change policy while looking after current jobs, while pushing to end casualisation and labour hire in the coal mining industry, which is the main factor that hurts coal miners. And secondly, it can actually increase our votes. At the last election, the second greatest reason for why people chose to vote for Labor was our climate policy. This is a sort of false dichotomy that you either have to win votes in a region or have a good climate policy. There are plenty of people up here who support Labor, and one of the key reasons why they support Labor is us having a strong climate policy that grows new jobs while protecting current jobs.
Well, Pat, why do you think Joel has gone the other way? I mean, we've had people ring us, email us and just say that it's self-interest. We did put that to Joel and he said no, but do you think there's some basis to that?
Oh, look, I'm not in a position to comment on that. I think that's a question best for Joel. I don't have insight into his motivations. I think his analysis is wrong. I admire his passion and his commitment to the Labor cause, but I think his stance is incorrect, and that's part of the great traditions of the Labor Party is having a free and frank debate. Joel is a backbencher now and he's entitled to express opinions in this area, but I think he's wrong both from a factual point of view and a political point of view. I had an analysis done of my electorate after the election to try and work out why people voted against Labor, and the higher the mining employment in a polling booth, the weaker the swing against Labor. Let me repeat that. The areas that swung the hardest against Labor were the areas where the fewest coal miners live. So I don't think it was coal and climate change that drove the push against Labor. It was some of our more controversial policies.
Right.
Franking
credits was the key one.
Yes.
Negative gearing.
Yeah.
And look, a perception that we just, people didn't trust us on the economy, which was unfortunate and wrong. And the other fact that, quite frankly, is that for whatever reason, Bill Shorten was unable to connect with people in New South Wales. Maybe it was a Victorian thing, but he just was unable to connect. So I had people coming up to me saying, I want to vote Labor, I support what you do as our local MP, but I can't vote for Labor because he's a leader. So they were the key factors. The biggest swings in my electorate were in places like Wyndale, which doesn't have a lot of coal miners living there. So I think that what caused the swing in 2019 was not coal and climate change. And I just think what Joel is promoting would consign us to permanent opposition, and that doesn't serve anyone's interest.
Right. Now, the subject of climate change is and has been a hot topic for a long time. With the election of Joe Biden as the president-elect of the United States, there's obviously been a move on, not just here in Australia, but a number of countries thinking, well, the USA will probably change their stance on the Paris Climate Change Agreement and buy back into it. And Joe Biden certainly said he would. Hence, there's been a push from, not just here, but around the world, obviously, to coming up with stricter targets. But Joel and now also South Australian Labor Senator Alex Gallagher has called for Mark Butler, who's been Labor's spokesperson on climate change since 2013, and he's taken policies to a number of elections now. Joel says they've been rejected. He's called for... Look, he's saying Mark Butler should be there, but maybe it's a time for a change. And now a couple of... Well, one other senator has come out. Do you think that maybe it is time for change?
No, I don't. That's two people out of a caucus of 95, to put it in context. And quite frankly, anyone in a job can probably find 2% of people who say it's probably time for a change. The fact is that we did not lose votes in the last election on climate change. Net overall, we gained votes because of climate policy. The election of the Biden government in America means that 70% of our trading is with countries that have net zero emissions as their objective by 2050 or 2060 in the case of China. We will not be allowed to free ride on those countries. They'll say it's time for Australia to step up and do its bit. And if we don't, what countries like America and continents like the European Union have said is we will face carbon border tariffs. That means that they will penalise our exports unless we commit to net zero emissions. So the reasons we want to support action on climate change isn't just because it's good for the environment. If we don't do it, our exports will be threatened, and we'll also miss out on hundreds of thousands of jobs that are in the offing if we actually invest in renewable energy and new industries like battery manufacturing. The truth is Australia's domestic climate policy won't determine what happens to coal mining in this country. Our policy at the 2019 election wouldn't have impacted any coal mine that was primarily digging up coal for export, which is 80% of them. The future of our coal mines will be determined by decisions made in boardrooms in Japan, South Korea, India and China, not in Australia. And this is the thing I find really troubling in this debate is the climate policy doesn't impact the future of export coal mining, but what it does do is determine whether we can grow clean jobs in things like battery manufacturing, lithium mining, installing wind farms and solar farms. We're missing out on huge opportunities because of the climate wars that have been going on for the last 15 years.
Does make sense that we transition sooner rather than later. So by 2030s, do you reckon net zero emissions?
No, 2050 is a reasonable amount of time. That's consistent with the Paris Treaty. But we need to cut our emissions so that we can hit 2050 because the way these treaties work is you just can't sort of flick a switch in 2049, not emit pollution for a year and hit the target. It's a cumulative. So you've got to try and reduce your emissions each year. And the truth is that under this government, and this has been missed because fortunately Labor, we've been too busy kicking each other, emissions aren't falling under this government. This government has an inadequate target of reducing emissions by 26% by 2030, and their own documents say they won't hit the target. At best, they'll only be 16% below 2005 levels, and the only way they get to 26% is by using illegal carryover credits from the Kyoto Treaty, which aren't accepted. They will be rejected by the rest of the world, especially with the election of the Biden government. So at the moment, we're going to have a much harder job because this government isn't taking climate change seriously.
Right. It sounds, Pat, as if you agree with many people that Joel's driven here by self-interest, not by good policy.
Well, and I'm probably going to sound like a Weasley word politician, I can't tell what's in Joel's brain. I'm not a psychiatrist. I can't tell his motivations. But what I can say is from a factual point of view, he is wrong about what drove the 2019 swing. He's wrong factually about the impact of our climate policy in terms of the future of industries like coal mining. And what his prescription is, not only does it mean that Labor would be in permanent opposition if we adopted his strategy, but secondly, we'll miss out on hundreds of thousands of jobs that are growing all around the world right now. There are 4 million clean energy jobs in the United States, for example. We'll miss out on our share of that pie if we don't get our act together. For example, 60% of the world's solar cells on people's roofs are based on technology developed at an Australian university, but we got zero jobs out of it because we didn't have a government committed to taking advantage of the jobs that come out of renewable energy.
Right.
So this is the huge issue, and Joel's motivation, I can't judge. I just think he's wrong, and I disagree with him.
All right, but then do you think if he continues on this path that perhaps his membership of the Labor Party might come into question?
Look, he's chosen to go to the backbench. And I should say, on his decision to go to the backbench, my understanding from within the right faction is that that deal was done 18 months ago, that he had said 18 months ago that he would give way to Ed Husic so he could return to the front bench. And I think, in fact, in his press conference, he said he only originally intended to serve 18 months. So I don't think it's fair to say that he's resigning because of climate policy, but he obviously has differences with where the majority of the party is going. But look, he is a backbencher now. Every backbencher is entitled to hold their own opinions on policy matters. But once the Labor Party comes together, decides our position on a policy, the entire party is bound by that policy, and that includes Joel. He will be bound once we've made that decision. But until we make that, as a backbencher, he's free to put forward his opinion on what we should do.
Yeah, all right. Thank you very much for having a chat with us this morning, Pat, and have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too.
And it's World Kindness Day today, Pat, as well as being Black Friday. So an interesting start to the weekend.
Yeah, a bit of kindness in politics, I think, would help everyone.
Yes, indeed. All right, thanks for that. Have a good weekend, Pat. Pat Conroy, member for Shortland on 2HD. It's